Yeah, thanks, Aidan, for having me on. Firstly, it's great to have a chat with you today. As well, strength and conditioning has morphed and has moved from different degrees of what people actually expect from an S&C coach. I suppose I would consider myself an athletic development coach, something that I would have taken from my time with Leinster Rugby. I know a lot of teams are taking that title at the moment, but that's exactly it. It's trying to develop an athlete to the best possible capacity you can. In particular, if you take a Gaelic footballer, for example, taking that person as an athlete first and trying to develop all the different capacities that he needs to play his sport. But ultimately, it's physical preparation, and it's getting whatever the sport may be, whatever the client may be that you're working with, is how do you get them to match the demands of what they're going to do, whether it's a collision-based sport like rugby, if it's a movement-based sport like Gaelic football or hurling, or it may be something like track and field, to build up the capacities that they need to perform at the highest level of their sport.
And you've already mentioned your links with rugby there, and we'll come back to that later in the chat. But you're a Carlow man, and you would have gone to Knockbeg, which has been known for its Gaelic football. And you're a senior hurler there with Carlow in the past as well. So you come from that Gaelic Games tradition there. So you know what it takes to perform at the highest level as well in the sport.
Yeah, many moons ago, I suppose a lot of that. But I would have played against a lot of the guys in coaching at the moment with Wexford, with Knockbeg, as you mentioned there. A lot of the lads playing with St. Peter's College and obviously good council. So I still continue to play my club hurling up in Dublin with Fogs, and it's always important to have a background. It gives you a massive advantage that you know the demands of the sport, because you've been in the trenches and you've done the running, you've done the weights, you've done all the stuff that the lads will be doing. But I suppose on the other side of that, there's a lot of top S&C coaches, you know, that would have no experience with the sport. You know, I wouldn't have much of experience with rugby, but I suppose I've went down that route as well. So it's, again, as we talked about earlier, it's about knowing the demands of what the guys are going to be doing, and that you can apply those the principles that we know that work in sports science and strength and conditioning to make sure you come out with the best athlete possible.
You're working with the Wexford GAA senior footballers this year. Did Wexford approach you, or how did that connection come about?
Yeah, so obviously, as I mentioned there, with my GAA background, it would have been Declan Brown that was supporting the senior footballers during the last lockdown, in that kind of 7 or 8 week period where they played their last championship. Declan has since taken a role with the development squads and more of a longer term pathway approach in developing the structures there for all our young footballers in Wexford. So, you know, Shane Roach was the one that approached me initially, and it seemed like a really good fit for me. I really like the ambition of the backroom team, you know, with Anthony Masterson and Philip Wallace and Shane, obviously himself. All I would have grown up, you know, watching the lads play, and you know, the massive heritage and tradition in Wexford football. And as well as when those guys were playing, I would have been watching them playing, you know, Tyrone and Down and Armagh, and being in that top eight, kind of top 10 in the country at the time, you know, and remembering those games where I think there was All Ireland semi-finals and stuff, that they were, you know, very, very close, and all the good days they had out in Leinster championship matches as well. So yeah, it was as well as with Shane sitting down and going through exactly where the lads were at, and a very young squad. And you know, we hit it off straight away, and really, as I said, really impressed with the ambition, and really impressed with the county board so far, the dealings I've had with them. We have our incoming chairman, obviously Micheál Martin, who, you know, is very, very progressive, and seems like there's going to be lots of good stuff in terms of the long term development for football in the county, and hurling in the county as well.
And we will be able to hear a bit more from Wexford GAA. They're launching a big plan in the coming week for the next 4 to 5 years there. So that's going to be certainly very interesting to see. But just going back to your role there, have you been able to actually meet up with the squad yet due to the COVID restrictions?
Yeah, so we would have had limited interaction with the players, obviously, with the COVID restrictions. It's a lot of one-on-ones, a lot of Zooms, a lot of, I suppose, upskilling on different softwares and things like that for the lockdown. But you know, it's going really well so far, and the guys are working as hard as we possibly can, and it's great to see, you know, how they're embracing all the different types of software that we're using to try and to monitor the players as much as possible. You know, it is a really, really tough time. You have to respect the way the lads are going about it, and yeah, it's really impressive to see the amount of, I suppose, benefit that they can get from a gym program, even remotely. It's not something that I would have been thinking I'd be doing is doing testing days and you know, assessing athletes from my living room. So it is going really well so far.
And we were speaking to a personal trainer there just before Christmas, Kira Tompkins, and she was saying about the difficulties of trying to do one-on-one training and that kind of stuff over a Zoom and Microsoft Teams. You mentioned some of the software there. How can you keep an eye on how players are doing? And do you find that some players are trying to take an easy way out with, oh God, no, the Wi-Fi is breaking up here?
I suppose the simple terms is, you know, as a coach, and I suppose a lot of coaches relate to this, is it's trying to get back to basics, and how most people would, you know, assess an athlete is having a chat with them. And, you know, you can do that over Zoom. I know it's not the same as in person, but finding out how a guy is feeling, you know, finding out, you know, what his work life is like, what are his requirements outside of training. That's a massive thing. You know, you can do that through Google Forms and build up a little bit of a rapport with their personalities to get an idea of what type of person they are before you even get to that first, I suppose, one-on-one where you're having a chat with somebody. But yeah, as I said, it's the technical side, I suppose, having a look at movements is something that you would love to do in person. You would love to get screening processes done. But again, it's all stuff that can be easily done through Microsoft Teams and through Zoom. So it's a little bit harder because you can't really get to see the actual profile or the height of an actual athlete or a client. So there is, I suppose, limitations with what you can do. And I find your coaching skills are really tested to the limit because you can't go in and there's no tactile, you know, where you could maneuver somebody into a position or where you could show them and demonstrate the exercise in real time. It's kind of a slower movement that you have to show them with your demonstration, and you're really working hard with, I suppose, your language and how you actually interact with them. Every word counts when you're dealing with them on Zoom. So it's very, very different, but it's something that I'm enjoying. You know, it's great to still be able to interact with people and still help people out in terms of their athletic development. So
are you finding the players are more motivated now to improve their fitness and to do this kind of grunt work that really they probably wouldn't enjoy in normal years because they're locked down, because they have more time to dedicate to it? Or do you find the players, you know, they're not really enjoying it as much because they don't have that outlet of going to a gym 3-4 times a week?
I suppose it depends, and everybody's circumstances is different. A lot of people have really, really tough jobs. You know, they've got taxing schedules. Other guys may have less time at the desk and may be able to, you know, train in the morning and maybe have time off in the afternoon to recover and then to train again. So it really, really depends. I think when you're talking about an intercounty footballer, you've got such a demanding training schedule that during this time it's probably given them a little bit more structure, and it's probably given something to look forward to at the end of the day, to switch off the tablet or the laptop and to go training and to get the work done. But I suppose having the flexibility to be able to work around your own schedule is probably important. You know, with GAA being an amateur organization, you obviously have, you know, we train maybe at 7 o'clock or 7:30 in Ferns on a Tuesday. You can work that or whatever way you want now. You know, you can do it on your lunch break, you can go before you head into your office at home to get your work done. So it really, really depends on everybody's individual circumstances. But I'm sure some guys are dreading the running, it's like any team, and some guys are really embracing it and looking forward to it.
Yeah, because preseason is so important in all sports now, really, because that's when the hard work is done, especially when it comes to fitness and physical work. You know, we have that classic scene of lads running up and down sand dunes for 3 or 4 weeks. It's a little more sophisticated now, I suppose, but it must be difficult for you and the lads when the timeline for pre-season keeps shifting. And what kind of work can you do in this kind of pre-season mode?
Yeah, I suppose initially you would be going all guns blazing for whatever start date we had. You know, I think it was about 15th of January, and you're preparing for a normal year, but things change and the goalposts were moved on us a couple of times. But I suppose we would have loved to have been playing league football in February, March, and you're always trying to prepare the lads if at the drop of a hat we'll be prepared to play a game. But I suppose your focus has to shift a little bit towards that longer term approach, and how now we have a little bit of time where we can build up a little bit more capacity in the players in terms of their aerobic running. We can slow things down in terms of we don't really need to perform in the next week or two, so we can focus on different modalities. You know, our younger players will be trying to focus on putting on a little bit of muscle mass and stuff like that. So it's ever changing, but it's something that we've set out is, you know, we really want to find a way with anything, and we have that mentality of we're trying to be as adaptable as possible and responding to whatever comes our way as quickly as we can.
What kind of mistakes do you think players make when they're training at home and they don't have the coach there, you know, keeping an eye on them?
Well, I suppose the biggest thing is, I suppose, previous injury can cause injury. I suppose the biggest predictor of injury would be what a person has in their injury history list. So guys tend to do exercises that they like and avoid the ones that they don't like. You know, chin-ups and stuff like that are the ones that tend to be forgotten about. But I suppose it's the basics that we will be looking to enforce and trying to make sure that everybody's doing them. I suppose from a, you know, maybe guys going back to club stuff and at a lower level, maybe it's the spikes in training load and guys trying to do too much training too quickly. We kind of know from the research that if we're trying to increase our training load, we want to do it slowly, and we want to do it progressively. So we don't want to be increasing the amount we're doing by about 10% week to week, because that can cause us, as I said, injury. The frequency that we're training, just not giving ourselves enough rest and recovery in between training sessions, can be another issue for people making mistakes at home. And I suppose muscle imbalances are something that, you know, we would have finished the lockdown season, which wasn't probably trained for appropriately because we had such a short space of time. So guys may have been carrying injuries into that and being left to your own devices, maybe without a physio or a coach. Can cause problems there as well. I suppose the main ones that people run into from looking at the first lockdown and even the NFL and professional rugby would be a lot of people would have built up a lot of mileage and a lot of time doing linear running, so running in a straight line, building up their fitness, and I suppose up to a lesser extent maybe doing 5 and 10Ks, and they forgot about, I suppose, the biggest part of the majority of team sports that we play are kind of chaotic and they're invasion sports, so they require a lot of change of direction, a lot of multi-directional movements. And so that would have been the biggest thing I would have seen, was guys going back to club training and county training and twisting ankles, you know, groin strains and stuff like that, just from the amount of load that they were incurring, because they're going straight back into, you know, games and straight back into changing direction and training and ran into problems. The other big issue is the high speed running. So people went from, you know, playing their sport where they're sprinting, they're recovering, sprinting, recovering, and expected to do these kind of middle distance linear runs, and expect to go back and sprint and ran into issues with the hamstring tears and pulls and stuff like that. So you need to make sure that for when you are going back, that you are doing multi-directional work, you're doing drills that are going to incorporate changing direction, accelerating, decelerating, and getting one or two sessions a week where you're actually fully sprinting and you're getting some speed work in. And they're the kind of, I suppose, the big rocks of what you'd be doing. Everything else is kind of generally covered by people. They look after that themselves and they know they need to be fit and they know they need to do a certain amount of kilometers per week. So the conditioning work is never really the issue. It's just those finer details around the speed work and changing direction.
It is something we have seen even in soccer in the UK as well, that Liverpool can't buy a centre-back at the minute because everybody keeps getting injured. A lot of that has been put down to their lack of pre-season work. You only have a very short amount of time when you do actually finally get to train as a team. So is injury something that, you know, it's a part of the game, but do you think it'll be more so this year?
Yeah, like it's unavoidable at times. You know, sport is not the healthiest thing, believe it or not, to do. You know, it's tough on our bodies. It's tough on our joints. The demands of the game will change slightly if teams are less fit. But you know, from judging by the last time, if you look at, you know, the Limerick Hurlers or Dublin Footballers or Wexford, you know, they're all fit, they're all ready to go. Everybody is in great shape. So it really is about making sure that you can try and hit those intensities or as close to those intensities in the weeks leading in before you get back onto the pitch. And then it's just about being really smart and planning appropriately and having a good periodized plan when you get back on the pitch, so that you find the balance between, you know, building that intensity and not building it too slowly, that you're not ready to hit the ground running if we had to play a game, but that you don't push the guys too far, that they break too early on. And it's really tough to strike that balance, but I suppose that's the art of sports science, I suppose.
In rugby in recent years, we've seen the argument that players have been packing on muscle mass and playing this kind of crash ball style, particularly here in Ireland. We seem to be moving away from that now at the minute, while the rest of the world seems to be. Ireland are kind of stuck with it at the minute. Do you think that particularly the success of the Limerick Hurlers has shown that, you know, these big physical athletes, you know, huge men, are going to be, you know, a short-term solution, but do you think that that's going to be a long-term winner for the likes of Limerick and, you know, maybe for Wexford as well?
It's hard to say. I suppose even if you do look at Ireland, if you kind of look at the profile of an Irish rugby player, you know, even guys that would have played, you know, Sean O'Brien, Keane Healy come to mind, the guys that leaned out a lot towards the end of their career, and you know, Keane is probably carrying 5 to 7 kgs less than what he would have been a few years ago. So I suppose everybody is ever changing and looking for the optimal body composition. So I find teams are definitely in rugby trying to get a little bit leaner, and they're trying to optimize their body composition as best they can. In GA, I suppose they're trying to increase their muscle mass as much as possible, which can be hard to do with the amount of running demands that you would have in GA. Like, you would cover a lot more distance in Gaelic football than rugby. So I suppose the big difference that you would find is the need for the collision, and that's why rugby guys are obviously that little bit bigger, and it's gain line orientated. You know, whereas as football, you can avoid contact if you want. And you know, some teams would have a big power game, and they would have a lot of big strong runners in Gaelic football, and they might use that to their advantage if they have big guys. So it comes down to, you know, what kind of players you have. What's your philosophy in terms of what your head coach has as well? So there's a lot of different moving parts, but I don't think there's one size fits all for anybody, and I don't think anybody that's listening that maybe a small Gaelic footballer would ever have to worry. You can always get a little bit stronger. You can always get a little bit more. A little bit relatively stronger for your body weight. So I don't think there's any one size fits all.
Something you wrote back in 2015 was about why we can't motivate our athletes as coaches. You say here that many coaches believe an inspiring speech will motivate their athletes to win or succeed in their respective sport. Like Bo Hansen, I disagree that we as coaches can motivate our athletes. Can you just explain that to us?
Yeah, so I suppose the title is a little bit of a clickbait, I suppose, in one way. But I suppose the reason being that you have extrinsic and intrinsic motivation, and I suppose it's the old carrot and stick. You know, if you do something good, you get a carrot. If you do something bad, you get the stick. And it's trying to get away from that with our athletes and to try build. You'll often hear now coaches talking about athlete-centered environments, and you'd even hear people talking about person-centered environment. And I suppose I would be a big advocate of getting to know the person first, and to know what motivates them, to understand their personal life, to understand, you know, have they kids, are they married, and stuff like that. So I think building the environment for athletes where they can have sustained motivation, they can have sustained I suppose extrinsic motivation, that they're not motivated by, you know, winning cups, winning trophies, winning matches, or they're not egotistical about winning games, that it's that they're process driven, that they're trying to be the best teammate that they can, that they're focused on their own individual improvement all of the time. And I suppose that comes down to what environment a backroom team or a head coach gives to a player, you know, and that's really, really important. I've seen lots of coaches go in and they've had a win at all costs mentality, and they've had a really successful season out of it. And, you know, if that's their prerogative, you know, that's really good. And if that's their goal, what they were brought there to do, fair play. But I think the longer term approach of having a really good environment, really positive, where, you know, there's psychological safety for people that, that want to speak up, and, you know, that teammates aren't, I suppose, interacting negatively with each other, that you're trying to be as positive as possible in the group, that young players are trying to step up and to be leadership figures in the group as well, I think is really important. So that's, I suppose, a long-winded answer on it, but we could talk all day about motivation in the team environment, but I think it's genuinely about providing the best environment possible for them so that players can really lead it and players can have a really good atmosphere when they come to training. They want to come to training. They're not fearful of the coach. They're not fearful in a team meeting that they made a mistake last Saturday and they're going to be, you know, given out to for, you know, you really need to build that culture of having psychological safety and making sure that players really want to turn up for you at training and at games.
You're the rugby coordinator at Terran York College. Students should be going back to school in a physical form very, very shortly. But do you think that we will see schools' rugby matches return this year? What's the current situation with sort of amateur rugby now?
It's hard to say. I suppose domestic rugby would have had a stint back. The AIL, the All-Ireland League, would have been back for a brief period, and it kind of had regional conferences between September. It was shut down around the time when we went into that second lockdown, so it is very, very hard to say. I would hope there would be. Rugby, I suppose, in the school setting hasn't, I think there was 3 or 4 games at the start of the year. Our school didn't actually get to play any in the end, but we're hoping and praying that, you know, maybe it might be in the off season or our typical off season, or maybe towards the summer. But it's very, very hard to say, and hopefully there is something, because it's been almost 18 months for some of the students in our place to actually play a game of rugby. So it would be great to get out and play some hopefully in the next few months if things get a little bit better.
And one final question: what do you think, as an S&C coach, you're just coming into the panel this year, but what do you think would qualify as success from sort of a fitness and a physical standpoint for Wexford this year?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, as I said earlier, it's maximising the effort levels that you have at every single training session, and it's trying to improve whatever physical metrics that you're set out to, whether it's your strength, your speed, your fitness, and it's trying to, maybe for an older player, sustain their career and provide longevity to that person. But, you know, all you can do is look at where you are as your baseline testing, and you're trying to get those scores to the best possible capability. And, you know, then it's about becoming an expert, I suppose, on the pitch. You have to forget about it at times, the gym scores and being in the gym. You kind of have to be the best you possibly can technically on the pitch. And if we can provide a good program that the guys can improve in terms of all those physical metrics, and it keeps them on the pitch. And Shane comes to me and he says, you know, we've got 30 guys to select out of 30. You know, I would consider that success on my part, but that comes down to the players, you know, nailing their recovery and nailing their own individual improvement. And I just think that's the best thing we can do, is provide availability to the coach, whoever is picking the team, and that the players have the opportunity to have as much time as possible improving their skill set and improving the technical areas that they need to. And, you know, if you can couple that with a good tactical plan, you'll hopefully be in good shape.
Before you go there, you just mentioned giving longevity to some of the older players. I don't know if you'll be able to do that to Brian Malone. He seems to be pretty good at doing it himself. Have you studied him and found out what's his magical secret?
I would love to know. You know, he's the consummate professional, and, you know, you can just look at his scores, and you know, he'll be hitting 35 by the time we line out, hopefully this season. You know, he's a phenomenal athlete, and, you know, it just goes to show you that it is possible. And you have to really be disciplined. You have to really understand a lot of the stuff that we would be, you know, going to college for 4 years around nutrition and recovery and how to actually train properly. So he's done an excellent job, and if we can do that for every Wexford guy coming through, it would be fantastic.
Absolutely, there might be still another decade in him left. Listen, Peter, thanks very much for taking the call there, and best of luck for the season ahead.
Thanks a million, Aidan. Thanks for having me on. Cheers.